Coming up on The Potter's Touch.
I got a chance to save my marriage. I got a chance to overcome this cancer. I got a chance to defeat this lump in my breast. I got a chance. I got a chance. I got a chance. I got a chance. Hell hates when you start talking like that. Demons hate when you start talking like that. Satan gets nervous when you start talking like that. When you ask God for objects, He answers with chance. And then as God answers with the chance, you at your own discretion have the opportunity how you respond to that chance. The kingdom Jesus is teaching us here is about the transference of chance. Yeah. The transference of chance. For God to allow me to have a chance is absolutely amazing. It is amazing because most people only give chances to certain people. But in our text, God has so switched things around that the least likely have an opportunity to do the Almighty. The good news is that God says the kingdom is likened unto a man who called his servants, his slaves together and gave them bags of gold. Wait a minute. That's kind of weird because you don't entrust wealth into slaves. That doesn't make sense. That wouldn't be the first thing you do if you're running AT&T and say, I'm gonna turn the company over to the people who are in the basement somewhere, and I'm gonna bring you up to the penthouse suite and let you run the organization. Not to belittle them, my father was a janitor, so don't get an attitude. But I want you to understand that there is nothing in the background of the slave that prepares him to execute on the level of decisions that are necessary to manage what has been allocated unto them. So it is a blessing, but it is also a burden. It is powerful, but painful. It is stimulating, but scary. That these three men would be selected is a compliment, but the compliment creates a chaos. Whenever God compliments you with a chance, expect a certain feeling of chaos to go along with the chance. That's how you know it's God. If it makes sense, it's not God. Whenever God does a thing, it doesn't make any sense. It yanks you out of the parameters of what you have allocated as your normatives and puts you in a place where you are dependent upon Him in a way that you wouldn't be dependent upon Him, because God is not just going to give you that which you are prepared of, but often what you are scared of. If God doesn't give you things that you are scared of, then faith has lost its job. Faith is in the unemployment line, because I don't need faith to do what I already know how to do. I don't need faith to be a slave. I've been a slave when the story started. I don't need faith to be a slave. I need faith when you take me out of my comfort zone and away from that which is familiar to me and put me in a position for which there is nothing on my resume that brings me into alignment with what you're about to do in my life. I don't know whether you know it yet, but I'm prophesying to somebody already. I know I didn't say, yea, I say unto thee, but I'm already speaking a word unto you about what God has been setting you up for. Hallelujah. you to God. He's been getting you ready to shift you into a realm that you won't feel prepared for. Look at somebody and say, I got a chance. Anytime people lose that feeling that they have a chance, they become unmanageable. They become difficult. They become erratic. They become critical. Dr. King said that riot is the language of the unheard. Anytime people feel like they have no chance, they get radical. They go over the edge. They get insane. That's why the enemy is after your feeling of hope. Because if you have no hope, faith has nothing to do. For faith is the substance of the thing that you hope for and the evidence of the thing you don't see. But if you're not hoping for anything, if he can kill your hope, if he can convince you to stay in your place, if he can get you to shut your mouth, if he can get you to give up on your dream, if he can get you to get so discouraged that you terminate everything that God has in front of you, then faith doesn't have a job because you have no hope. That's why all the voices are talking in your head. That's why every time you get in the parking lot, there's a voice that's telling you you're an imposter and you're a fake and you're a fraud and you don't have no business in this role and you'll never be a good mother and you'll never be a good wife and you'll never be a good husband. The devil is only lying to you. So whatever it is he's been telling you, you're the opposite of that. If he's been telling you you're stupid, you're smart. If he's been telling you you're broke, you're rich. If he's been telling you you're ugly, you're fine. If he's been telling you you can't make it, you're stronger than an ox. He's a liar. So whatever he says, I want you to believe the opposite so your faith can get its job back. So we're going to testify to two or three people. Tell them, I got a chance. I got a chance. I got a chance. I'm 60, but I got a chance. I'm 40, but I got a chance. I got a chance at going back to school. I got a chance about going back into business. I got a chance about getting my house. I got a chance about getting out of debt. I got a chance out of building my family. I got a chance for my children to grow. I got a chance to be a good wife. I got a chance to be a good husband. I got a chance to save my marriage. I got a chance to overcome this cancer. I got a chance to defeat this lump in my breast. I got a chance. I got a chance. I got a chair. I got a chair. Hell hates when you start talking like that. Demons hate when you start talking like that. Satan gets nervous when you start talking like that. Marianne Williamson wrote a poem that stood out in my mind, and I wanted to use it today to underscore what is happening here. She says, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear in that we are powerful beyond measure. That's what we're scared of. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant? Who am I to be gorgeous? Who am I to be talented? Who am I to be fabulous? We talk ourselves down. So Marianne goes on to say, actually, who are you not to be? She says, you are a child of God. You're playing small. Your playing small does not serve the world. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightening about shrinking so that other people won't feel unsure around you. Stop being a martyr for other people's comfort. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It is not just in some of us, it is in every one of us. as we let our own light shine, we consciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated, watch this, as we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. I can see why Nelson Mandela quoted her in his address in South Africa, because it is the inner fear that stops us from snatching the chance. The householder gave them the gold, but they had to receive it. If you don't receive it, then the story stops with an offer. I can offer you anything. I can offer you my house. I can offer you my car. I can offer you my clothes. I can offer you anything. But if you don't receive it, now it takes a lot of faith for a slave to receive the master's wealth, because he has not seen himself in that light. So the image you have of yourself, I've been reading these books about how eyesight and image affects memory. And if you don't have a good image of yourself, it's going to affect how you remember yourself. So if there's nobody outside telling you stay in your place, then there's a voice on the inside telling you to stay in your place, because there is an association between eyesight and memory. We learn better when we can see it. So can you see yourself with what God is trying to give you? If you have a have-to mentality with God, you don't understand who God is. You ought to have a want-to ministry with God. Can you imagine coming home to your wife saying, I don't have to kiss you. We still gonna be married whether I kiss you or not. I don't have to. No, you don't have to, but you're supposed to want to, because love is about giving, and love is about sowing, and love is about understanding. Reciprocity, it's not just give me God, give me God, give me God, and don't ask me for anything. There's real love makes you want to give something, makes you want to do something, makes you want to say something. That's why little kids come up and they hand mama a drawing, and don't nobody know what it is but mama and God. But she pins it up on the refrigerator, because love will find something to give. It must express itself, or it's not legitimate. If anybody tells you they love you and they don't ever give you anything, be suspicious. What confuses me about the text is that after he gave it to them, he left. Come on here. That's exactly where I'm going. God will give you something and not tell you. What to do with it? God will give you a baby and not tell you how to take care of it. Y'all don't hear what I'm saying. God will give you a marriage and not tell you how it works. God will give you a church and not tell you how to run it. God is famous for putting you in situations and then not giving you information. It's not like he told them what to do with it. It's not like he said, I want you to multiply what I gave you. It's not like he told them where the bank was and where to make the investment and how to do it, because he stopped talking to them like servants the moment they became stewards. Because, see, servants just follow commands, but stewards have to think. And God said, for where he's getting ready to take you, You can't just follow commands and wait on doors to open. You're going to have to think and find creative ways to make the next move happen. Your next move is in between your ears. When your head shifts, your life is going to shift. Oh, God, do you hear what I'm saying? Can I go deeper? Who am I talking to? I'm talking to somebody. The battle is after your mind, and that's why all hell is breaking loose against your mind and your emotion, because the enemy wants you so upset, so confused, so disturbed, so upset that you can't think, because the breakthrough has to happen in your head before it happens anywhere else. Nobody told them to make it more. Nobody told them to make it more. Nobody told the little boy to give his lunch. Nobody told the one leper to turn around and go back. And yet Jesus asked him, where are the nine? If you're going to ask where are the nine, it seems like you should have told him, I expect you to come back. So the kingdom operates like this. It requires discernment, not commandment. As soon as the Lord speaks, I'm going to do it. As soon as the Lord, if it be the Lord's will, and whatever you say, Lord, that's what I'm going to do. But what do you do when God doesn't say anything? And yet he has an expectation that means he expects you to think, because you are stewards of a chance. So you can no longer think like a slave. You were rewarded for being obedient, but now you've got to be creative. Oh, come on, somebody. Somebody get this, because this is gold. You were rewarded for being obedient. Slaves are rewarded for being obedient, but now you've got to be creative. And that's scary, because I'm creative without instruction. That means I got to stop spending hours scrolling through my phone, looking at everybody's stories, because I need time to think. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. The only reason I'm preaching this tonight is because you got a chance. I know that somebody in this room's got a chance. I've been praying for the last 3 days. I didn't know who was going to be here, but I said, God, send who you want to be in this room. And I know I've got a word for you right now. You got a chance. I don't care what the doctor said, the accountant said, the CEO said, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker. The Holy Ghost said that God is going to give you a chance to turn the whole thing around. He's going to put it within your reach and within your power to bring about a massive change. Who am I preaching to? When the story of the prodigal son is being preached, and you read the prodigal son, the younger of the sons came to the father and said, give me the portion of goods that followed to me. All right? Next verse, he divided unto them, not him, them, his living. One boy took his living and ran away from home. And the other one took the same amount of money and stewarded it. One spoiled it, one stewarded it. What I want you to see is both of them got it. Absolutely. Everybody's going to get a chance tonight, but everybody's not going to manage the chance that they get. Somebody's going to take the chance, and it's going to make you run out in the street. The other one's going to take the chance and turn it into something. He gave one five. He gave the next one two. He gave him one. That right there would have killed us. because we would have spent the whole rest of the text arguing about what's wrong with me that you gave him more than you gave me. And that don't make no sense. I've been serving just as long as he had. And why did you give him 5 bags of gold and you only gave me 2? And you gave me 2 and I'm the only one over here got 1. And let me see what you got. Let me look at what you got. Comparing yourself with somebody else is not wise. God gave you what you could handle. The Bible said he gave it unto them according to their ability. And God doesn't want to give you stuff that's too high for you. Stop asking for stuff just because you see somebody else with it. You don't know what they had to pay for what they had. You don't know what they have to go through for what they had. You only want what God wants you to have. Be it 5, 2, or 1, I can be just as successful with 2 as you are with 5. Because the Bible said he took the 5 and turned it into 10. He took the 2 and turned it into 4. Now he's got 10 and the other guy's got 4, but both of them got 100-fold return. 100-fold return is based on what you started with. So the 5 was a good investment. The 2 was a good investment. But this third steward of a chance, this third steward of a chance, somebody say, I'm a steward of a chance. Say it again. See, that's such an empowering thing. Because first of all, you're saying to your soul, I got a chance. Second of all, you're saying I'm a steward, which means I'm in charge. That means I'm in charge of my chance. That means it's up to me. That means it's up to me. So I can stop blaming the devil. I can stop blaming the devil. Because most of the things you call the devil, it's you sabotaging. Wait, y'all, there is no devil in this text. There is no devil in this text. Not in the Greek, not in the Hebrew, not in the Swahili. I don't care what language you're looking up, there is no devil in the text. The only devil was enemy. The fear, the one man that ends up cast into outer darkness says, I did it because I was scared. I knew how you were. I knew how you reap where you don't sow. I know how you're a hard man. You know what he's doing? He's thinking like a slave in a steward's position. And what I want you to see is that this next shift requires a change in mindset. Write this down. Your mindset will control your assets. So the one man says to the master when he came back, and when the master came back, I thought, wow, man, you're calling in on the carpet because you want to know what did they do with what you gave them. And you didn't tell them what to do with it. And God says, I'm not going to tell you everything. I'm going to give you a chance. I'm going to give you a chance. That's all I'm going to give you. God's going to give you a chance. He said, I passed by this tree for 3 years and I've seen no fruit. Why cumbereth it the ground? You've been stuck in the same spot for 3 years. I'm thinking about taking you out. And then God says, leave it alone. I'm gonna let you dig around it and dung around it for 1 more year. I don't know who this is for. But you got a year to turn this thing around. This is your year. Let me tell them, I don't think they hear it. This is your year to completely turn this thing around. This is your year to turn turn the trajectory of your family around. This is your year for your daughter to see how strong a woman really is. This is your year for you to stand up and be the kind of man that your son wants to imitate. This is your year to break every curse and every bondage that makes you want to hide your gifts, your talents, your creativity, your resources. Come out wherever you are. Come out wherever you are. You've been in hiding. You've been in hiding. You've got reason to be afraid. You've been through situations that made you afraid. But God said, in order to receive this increase, you've got to come out of hiding. Come out wherever you are. Tell your neighbor, say, I'm coming out. The reason I want you to tell your neighbor is that you got to prepare the people around you for you to come out, because they have become conditioned to you hiding your resources, your talent, and your creativity, and they've gotten used to seeing you in one dimension, and you need to warn them, I'm coming out. Do you have any idea what God would do with your crisis right now if you would worship him in spite of the crisis?
See yourself as blessed in every season of your life. For your gift of any amount, learn to survive and thrive in life's peaks and valleys with Bishop T.D. Jakes' best-selling book, Can You Stand to Be Blessed?
Do you have any idea how God would move if you would worship him in the middle of trouble?
For your gift of $125 or more, you'll receive the Summer of Blessings collection, which includes the He's Already Won message series on USB, the Wrapped in Blessings beach towel, cooler tote, and 20-ounce tumbler, along with the Can You Stand to Be Blessed book.
You may have come to your wits' end, but the Lord said there's going to be a resurrection in your life.
Recover all God has for you. Click or call today. Feel free to reach out to us on social media and share your story of how God is impacting your life. We look forward to seeing you next time on The Potter's Touch.